You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, we're back in the thick of it now. We're rolling out of this fight night featuring Roman Dolidze and Nassourdine Imavov, and we are rolling straight in to another fight night featuring singing and dancing Jack Hermanson against Joe Pyfer, which of course goes down on Saturday, the day before the Super Bowl. So you know they're going to put the good stuff on right there, right before everyone gets into the big game. That's when the UFC is going to unload all the chambers in the gun with Jack Hermanson versus Joe Pyfer. So we all got that to look forward to. I would say, if anything, this last weekend, I think people got what they wanted out of this fight night event, which means a fair amount of fairly good stoppages, right? You had Themba Garimbo, knocked out Pete Rodriguez in 32 seconds. Charles Radke had a first-round KO of Gilbert Urbina, and then said some pretty weird shit at the post-fight press conference, which we will get into during listener mail. That was like a double knockdown KO, where you knock the guy down once and that's not good enough. He's allowed to get back up, and then you knock him out again. Randy Brown had a KO of the 39-year-old King of Kung Fu, Muslim Salikov. And of course, the one I wanted to talk about for just a second before we really get into the meat of this episode. Meatball Molly went out there, made her strawweight debut, saw a very intense version of Meatball Molly out there. She apparently was disgruntled, maybe felt a little bad, felt a little betrayed in some ways in how people reacted to her most recent loss. She goes out there, wins via armbar just 1 second before the end of the first round. I got to tell you, given the popularity of Molly and the popularity of who's the other guy whose name I'm blanking on right
this second?
Patty Pimblett. Yeah, the popularity of Patrick Pimblett, obviously, whose name I cannot remember. It would be nice to see these guys get on a little bit of roll, right? Like I think it's good for business. It's good for everybody if Meatball Molly and the old guy Patty can get it together a little bit here.
Well, yeah, we talked a little bit about what was the UFC's plan here with Meatball Molly, because she got to a certain level of name recognition and maybe even popularity where it didn't seem like maybe the skills were entirely caught up to that point. People would and have made the same accusation toward Patrick Pimblett. And then we sort of threw her in there against some people where, like, especially we threw her in that Aaron Blanchfield fight, and it was a, you know, big-time pay-per-view spot for her at UFC 281. and kind of just got run over. And we went, well, maybe time to take a step back. But if you were there, you know, if you're Meatball Molly, you're sitting there in November of 2022, you look around in February of 2024, and they're like, how about a prelim spot on one of these fight night cards? Where even the dude in the co-main event is like, man, people don't give a damn about this. You might very well kind of go, hey, what the hell? What happened here? You know, lost a couple fights, but damn, did it really fall off that hard? Did everybody just forget the Meatball Molly hype? So I could see it coming in with a little bit of a head of steam, trying to remind everybody, you're still here. You're still a going concern. And then maybe there's reason to get a little bit of enthusiasm going.
God, my apologies, not only to Patrick Angus Pimblett, but the entire city of Liverpool for blanking on his name right there. I need to do better, frankly, than that.
That's how you get headbutted in a pub, is by blanking on the name Paddy Pimblett.
Couldn't remember the name of Patrick Bartholomew Pimblett, and now the entire city's angry with me. There's a fair amount of really good nicknames floating around the UFC right now. Meatball Molly is one of them. Just on this card alone, as I mentioned before, you had the King of Kung Fu, which I don't know.
What happens if you lose as the King of Kung Fu? Are you deposed? I mean, you didn't lose in Kung Fu, I suppose.
Yeah, no, you can still be the King of... You can go back to Kung Fu and still hold your head high.
I mean, there might be a duke or somebody somewhere in the court who feels like now is the right time for a coup. You might feel that your reign is weak.
Yeah, a little palace intrigue. A little politicking behind the scenes.
God only knows what the jesters are going to say about you after you lose as the King of Kung Fu.
Yeah. You also had Charles Radke out here, whose nickname is Chuck Buffalo.
I'm sorry?
Chuck Buffalo. Which in a way, I mean, it fits right in with some of the nicknames that the Co-Main Event podcast likes to give people. Like, you know, Bobby Knuckles. You could have Chucky Buffalo, right? Chucky Buffalo seems like a guy who might pick you up in the car in order to take you to see the boss. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you've been called to a meet. We're going to send Chucky Buffalo over in a Cadillac. Come see the boss. I could see Chucky Buffalo being a wheel man.
Yeah, or like... a bunch of TVs fell off the back of a truck. Who can move these for us real quick and quiet? Well, Chucky Buffs could.
Yeah.
Good old Chucky Buffalo.
Yeah.
I could see it.
And of course, we'll be talking about this episode, because coming up this weekend, one of my favorites in the entire UFC, and that would be Joe Body Bags Piper. Pfeiffer.
That's Body Bags.
Body Bags with a Z. Indeed. Body Bags.
I wonder what the discussion was like there when they were like, all right, you put people in body bags, right? So we'll go with body bags. And he was like, it's missing something, you know?
Yeah.
It's missing a little bit of razzle dazzle. And they're like, what if we spelled it with a Z at the end? And he was like, boom, done, meeting adjourned. Let's move on this one, fellas.
I think we can all be proud of the work we did here today, fellas. Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you want more, you can find Ben Folks and I all week over at the Co-Main Event podcast Patreon page. Hit us up over there, patreon.com/co-main-event. Get loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to the official Discord message board, which after we've been plugging it a little bit here on the show, the Discord message board is popping off. It's going off over there all the time, 24 hours a day. People just chewing the fat over there on any number of topics, MMA and non-MMA related. You want to go there, talk about TV shows? Somebody's going to take you up on that. Somebody's going to want to watch TV shows with you. Talk about those. As you guys know, right now, we're offering 7-day free trials at the $5 level for the Patreon. You can jump on board absolutely for free. Check out all the content happening over there. Take a look and then decide if you want to jump on board for real. Everybody knows we are a completely independent podcast. We don't have the backing of a big parent company or any of the major MMA websites. We're just two guys talking into microphones, and we've been doing it for over a decade. But the truth is, we can only keep making the show with the support of awesome listeners like you. Help keep the CME alive by joining over at the awesome community at patreon.com/co-main-event. Another way you can support the show is by going to comainevent.com and clicking the link at the top right-hand corner of the screen that says shop. That'll get you into our merchandise shop. You can find all kinds of stuff over there. T-shirts, coffee mugs, hats, hoodies, anything you could possibly want. Just go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link that says shop. As always, we're partnering with our friends at Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough. For all your design needs, hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. We got music again this week from longtime listener and friend of the show, Ross Jarborg. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can check out more over at soundcloud.com/STHLM Ross. I believe that stands for Stockholm Ross, our guy.
Stockholm Ross.
Three rounds as usual this week in the co-main event podcast. In round number one, Nasruddin Imavov pretty much smoked Roman Dolidze on Saturday. And look, if you're going to have a lopsided five-rounder as the main event of one of these low-profile fight nights, you might as well make it weird. And Imavov did that. And in round number two, Renato Moicano is business. And business is inscrutable. And in round number three, the slumping, singing, and dancing Jack Hermanson tries to fend off the streaking Joe Bodybags Pfeiffer in a middleweight matchup that might shed some more light on what is rapidly becoming a pretty interesting 185-pound title picture. All that, plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff, but first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from our guy Darkwing Duck, who emails, Tyson Fury showed up with a nasty cut last week, and for a day or two, his fight with Alexander Usyk was off. Now it's back on again for May in Saudi Arabia. How do I know all this? Because more and more boxing news has started to make its way into my brain. The announcement for the rescheduled fight was made by Ariel Helwani, so that didn't hurt. But the question is, do you guys find yourselves more interested in boxing since Ngannou took Fury to the limit? Or is it just because more and more we see MMA platforms starting to report boxing news? Now, I'll be honest with you, Ben. After seeing Big Fran go out there, put the leather on Tyson Fury, I do find myself paying a little bit more attention to boxing, at least these main guys, these top guys at the heavyweight level, who could be potential Big Fran matchups for as long as Ngannou wants to stick around and continue to try to take boxing matches, take big money boxing matches. I'm interested to see what happens next for Tyson Fury, frankly. And I knew that he had this fight booked with Usyk. And by the way, Usyk has my attention because he just seems like an unbelievable weirdsmobile.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So I'm into that. So I was kind of looking forward to seeing these guys fight, and then I was a little, I'm not going to say I was down, but I gave a little sigh when I saw that their fight was off. Now it's back on. I guess I'm happy about that, and we got the Anthony Joshua thing percolating for Ngannou. So yeah, I actually do. I am paying a little bit more attention, I have found, to the heavyweight boxing ranks.
Well, yeah, I think already heavyweight boxing was having a little bit of a moment just because you have a intersection of several interesting personalities and top dudes who all seem like you could kind of get them into a round robin situation and have a lot of interesting fights. And then you throw Big Franny and Guns in there. And yeah, I can see how already MMA fans, if they're primed to care about any boxing at all, it's probably going to be heavyweight boxing. And then Francis Ngannou gets your attention because we feel invested in how well his boxing career goes. So that sure helps. I mean, I feel like I probably pay attention to a little more boxing than your average MMA fan just normally. And depending on who you got involved, my interest goes up or down. And heavyweight has been interesting in boxing for a little while now. Francis Ngannou, I think, just gets you... it expands the Venn diagram a little bit of who you can get roped into it. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a whole lot of people who have just in the past, 6 months to a year, learned some of these names or maybe heard some of the names and didn't really have a strong feeling one way or another. And yeah, if you're a boxing promoter, you might find that there is a bigger potential audience to pitch something like Furyk and Usyk to than there was before Francis Ngannou got involved. I would not be surprised if that's the case, at least to some extent.
Next question this week comes to us from Scott, who writes with the subject line, "If a Bellator occurs in the woods and nobody watches, did it really happen?" Writes, "The PFL announced the first quote-unquote Bellator event of 2024. It's called Bellator 302 in Dublin, headlined by Corey Anderson versus Carl Moore in March. It'll air internationally on DAZN, and there is no USA broadcast partner announced at this time. Maybe they can get Showtime to air it." Now, see, Ben, Bellator barely even exists anymore, and people still making fun of it, right? Scott's going to come on here and be like, "Oh, Bellator sucks." Like, yeah, quit kicking them when they're down, man. Like, they got bought, they got absorbed by another organization. They are a walking, shambling zombie of an MMA organization right now, and we're still putting our elbow in their ribs. Like, ain't nobody going to watch this Bellator. Yeah, we know, man. They went out of business, for God's sakes. Let them alone. Leave them alone, Scott.
I mean, it's done, and yet here we're sitting here talking about Bellator 302. That's weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Admittedly, like, yeah, that's weird.
That whole situation just feels weird. Also, it's like, put yourself in Corey Anderson's shoes, right? You're out here, you know, you can't, he coming off that win last summer against Phil Davis, trying to make something of whatever time you got left on the clock in MMA as a 34-year-old dude with a lot of miles on the old odometer. And then they're like, okay, good news, Corey, we got you a fight booked. It's at Bellator 302 for a company that functionally feels like it no longer exists. Also, people in America probably won't be able to watch it. Anywho, get out there and give them hell, Corey. And you're going like, this doesn't seem great for me. This doesn't seem great for the Corey Anderson business. I'm trying to be beasting 25-8 out here, man. I don't, what are we doing?
Well, now you got a beast in a different time zone. Now you're beasting over there on Ireland time.
I just don't know. I don't know how what is the beast in exchange rate, you know?
I don't know. I hope it's favorable for Corey Anderson. I'm just joking, Scott. Just kidding. I'm kidding because I love you. Because I love your question. I mean, if you're going to keep Bellator alive in any sense, it makes the most sense to do it as an international product, right? We've been led to believe they've got some TV deals over there. Yeah. They got some popularity. They tried to move in, especially in Ireland, frankly, after the UFC kind of cut bait and gave up for the most part on a real organized international expansion plan over there. Scotty Cokes and the guys went over there, did some shows. They had some popularity. So if you're going to keep Bellator up and running in any regard, and I don't necessarily think you should, I don't know if that's a great idea, but if you're going to do it, you might as well do it over there where it seems like you do have some fans.
It does, though, feel like you're playing out the string.
Yeah,
right?
And they might be. They might be just playing out these various international television deals until they're over, and then Bellator will be over. I don't know. Next question this week comes to us from Dookie Fernandez, who writes, "Somebody named Charles Radke got a knockout at the most recent fight night. Never heard of the guy before this. Then he came to the press conference and kind of seemed to imply he should be getting paid to do interviews. What the fuck? Does Chucky Rads..." Okay. Now I'm torn. Which is better, Chucky Buffalo or Chucky Rads?
I mean, I like Chucky Buffalo for how kind of baffling it is,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah.
There's something I appreciate about that.
Does Chucky Rads really think anybody would pay to find out who he wants to fight next, especially when the answer is probably whoever the UFC wants? Please discourse. This was weird. Did you see the video of this at the post-fight press conference where somebody just tried to ask him the most innocuous question you could possibly ask an MMA fighter who has just won a fight, and that is, who do you want to fight next? Usually, we ask them to give it away for free inside the cage in conversation with DC or Michael Bisping. Now we ask him at the post-fight press conference, and he wants to put that shit on pay-per-view. Charles Radke's trying to put who do you want to fight next behind the paywall at ChuckyBuffalo.com, right? Like, we're going to give him $5 to find out who Charles Radke's going to break the news of who he wants to fight next. Come on, son. We don't have time for that, nor do we have the money, frankly.
Yeah, and just like, the thing I always want to know when somebody says this, especially somebody where you are on the undercard of a fight night event that... it's not even in the top 5 most anticipated fight night events of the year, like from the UFC's perspective. They are looking at this as just some fights. You're on the undercard of that. You go out there, you get a good win.
Yeah.
Get a good knockout, land the clean left hook, you know, look good doing it and everything. Showing off a little bit of personality in the post-fight interview, even if it's the personality tends toward a little bit dickish to your opponent afterwards, but still, you know, that you can work with that in fight sports. That's not the worst thing in the world. And then to show up and be like, you got to pay me if you want to hear from Chucky Buffalo. And I just want to know, when has that happened for you? When in the past, in any of your lived experience as a professional fighter, has a media outlet paid you for an interview? Because they just got to get that sweet, sweet Radke content. Like, when has that happened? Because I don't think it's happened. I mean, maybe it's just wishful.
Yeah.
Hey, I won't get paid if I don't ask. That kind of thing. But if it has happened, by all means, tell us who. Tell us who paid you, because I would love to know. I would love to know what they got for their money. On the other hand, I got to admit, you go and you act that way at the press conference. There is a part of me that turns into Royal Tenenbaum, basically watching you and going, what the hell kind of way is that to act? But then there's another part of me that's like, well, how else was Charles Radke going to get us to talk about him come Monday morning? Here we are.
Yeah,
he accomplished that part of it. And we always say, it's kind of half the battle.
I mean, I'm going to pose this question later about Renato Moicano, and I'll just ask you, do you think he's doing a thing? Is he doing a thing here? Or is he just being Charles Radke? Is he just being Chucky Rads?
I mean, we always say, right, that when you're doing a gimmick, the best gimmicks are your real personality, just with the volume turned up a little bit. Yeah. That's the impression I get here. Although it does kind of, it hurts the gimmick a bit if you're like, you got to pay me if you want to hear, if you want to hear me answer these questions. And then nobody says shit, dude. Nobody says shit. Everybody's just like, we don't, in fact, want to know anything from you that badly. It's just crickets out there. And you're like, well, I don't know. It didn't go great.
Shades of Henry Cejudo saying he was going to retire, and the UFC being like, bye. Have fun. Have fun in retirement. You asked how many media outlets or which media outlets are offering to pay Charles Radke for his services. I would just wonder how many media outlets are even trying to talk to Charles Radke for free. I can't imagine that the media requests runneth over. I can't imagine Charles Radke can't even stay on top of all the media requests he's getting.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
I mean, if the goal here was just like stand out on a fight night event, then I have to admit it happened.
Yeah.
It actually went out there and happened. If the goal was to actually get paid off some interviews, well, I don't know. You got to give us at least a sneak peek of what we could hope. You know, it's like
OnlyFans sneak peek kind of.
Yeah, you want to give people like a preview. Like if you're, you know, you throw out some kind of crazy soundbite opinion, whatever, and be like, for more of that, contact me.
If you like what you hear on the show.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you do it. That's how the professionals do it, Chad. The
professionals do it. I mean, if he's going to do this, I feel like I want him to come out in like a 70s lounge singer outfit. Basically, I want him to be Ric Flair. I want him to come out there and be like, you think you deserve to talk to Chucky Buffalo?
Yeah.
Get your checkbooks out, boys. Just something like that. Not this thing that he did, which I just kind of lame and unseemly. And as you said, nobody took him up on it. So that's embarrassing. Next question this week comes to us from Tyler Halperin, who writes, Cyborg seems unhappy with the PFL or Bellator or whoever it is she happens to fight for now. She went on Twitter over the weekend and vented about how she needs to get a fight booked in the first half of 2024. My question is, the PFL/Bellator fucking up here? You would think after Kayla dogged them for the UFC, Cyborg would be one of their better known fighters and they'd want to use her ASAP. Am I right? I mean, yeah, this is the first, or at least my first inclination that there was maybe trouble brewing behind the scenes between the new PFL Bellator monster and Cyborg. Although I like Cyborg. I want to see her fight. I think she is generally and genuinely probably a good person, but it kind of seems like this happens a lot with
her. That's what I was going to say.
Kind of seems like this is not the first time, nor is it like a blip on the radar for Cyborg. This ain't the first time. It's not our first rodeo with Cyborg saying stuff like this.
I will say, however Chris Cyborg feels about your organization when she has a contract with you, she's going to feel some way. It's going to be a strong feeling in one direction, and she is going to make sure people know about it. And that pattern has repeated a lot through her career. She first signs, very excited to be in business with you, and make sure everybody knows however you're treating her is better than the last place and how they treated her, and she's so happy to be here. And then by the end of it, she will probably be less happy. And that's just kind of how it goes. I'll tell you this. I feel like I'm pretty confident I'll know when Chris Cyborg does have a next fight booked, because I'll get an email from ChrisCyborg.com about it.
I love getting an email from Chris Cyborg. Just every time it happens, every time my phone like shows me a little update, she has a little email thing pops up and it says Chris Cyborg. Just for a split second, I'm like, Chris Cyborg sent me an email? And then I realize, oh, this is just like her mailing list thing that she does every time.
You were just going to open it up and it'd be Chris Cyborg in there. It'd be like, hey, Chad, I just wanted to see how you're doing. Have you been watching a new season of True Detective? I thought of you when I saw it. It seems right up your alley, man. Anyway.
Do you want to come to my birthday party? I do agree that like if I were the PFL/Bellator, I might want to try to get Chris Cyborg out there in the cage. Like, you know, you did, in fact, just lose Kayla Harrison. You might want to try to get some attention for anything, frankly, and maybe do it for your for the women's fighters you still got left over there.
Yeah, good. Chris Cyborg is one of those people where she's still known enough, she can still generate enough. You can kind of put Chris Cyborg versus TBD up there on a fight card and you know that she's going to generate at least a little bit of interest.
Yeah. All right, we're going to squeeze this last one in from Area Code Zero, who writes, okay. Aside from, quote, styles make matches, there is no more ubiquitous phrase in the world of MMA than there are weight classes for a reason. What?
I mean, there are some more ubiquitous. There's lots of ubiquitous phrases, but okay.
What that reason seems to be a carefully guarded secret. Is a carefully guarded secret. The weight classes don't even apply when the matches actually take place, and it seems like more and more fighters are moving into and out of different weight classes. John Lineker once fought as a flyweight and then on Saturday fought Shinya Aoki at welterweight.
Well,
so why
extenuating circumstances out that hoe? Sure. You know what I'm saying?
So why do we have weight classes? Wait, that's a secret. So don't answer that. Instead, tell me how someone like bantamweight Sean O'Malley weighing in at 135 would do against a featherweight weighing in at 145. Sean likely can't beat the featherweight champ in that scenario, but could he beat the 50th ranked featherweight or the 20th? Where would he rank as a bantamweight among the featherweights? Answer that question and the enduring mystery cloaking the existence of weight classes will begin to unravel.
I do not feel that there is a mystery about weight classes.
Yeah.
And why we have them.
Yeah. I feel like this question wandered a little far from the shore a little bit here, but I understand the question, right? What good are the weight classes if guys are cutting 30 pounds to make 155? And if, you know, you're a bantamweight one day and you're a featherweight the next day and there's all this stuff happening and you are going to have a flyweight step in and fight a welterweight on short notice, even if that is sort of a singular and unplanned situation. Like, what good are these weight classes, and maybe is there a way we could do that differently?
I think that we do still generally end up with dudes fighting people around their size. Mm-hmm. I agree that it is dumb to go through these just intense depleting weight cuts the days before the most important part, when you actually get in there in the cage and fight each other. It's dangerous. It is very, very painful and awful for the fighters. A lot of them tell you it's one of the worst parts about being a fighter. And it's all just to avoid giving up an advantage. Because all you do is, if we're both 180 pounds cutting down to 155, we both do it. It sucks for both of us. And we don't get anything out of it other than we still get to fight somebody around our same size on fight night. I agree that whenever people are able to talk about it, like if McGregor and Chandler are like, hey, let's fight at middleweight, bro. And we know we're both around the same size. So fuck it. Like, I feel fine about middleweight against you anyway. You feel fine about middleweight. Let's meet there. I have no problem with that at all, because it does make some kind of sense. And it's just sort of like a prisoner's dilemma sort of thing most of the time, where they're like, I don't trust you to not be trying to get an advantage. So I am willing to put myself through this torturous process just to make sure that I don't suffer a huge disadvantage. Because, I mean, I think people maybe don't realize that 10 pounds, especially for those smaller guys, where 10 pounds represents a bigger percentage of your total body weight, you know, if we're just standing there throwing punches, 10 pounds might not be a huge gap. But when we're wrestling and we're, you know, trying to put the weight on top of you, once you get into the grappling game, once you're coming into completing takedowns and keeping somebody down, 10 pounds is a lot. 10 pounds will make a big difference, especially when we're all super skilled and, you know, we're kind of playing a game of inches to begin with.
Yeah. I think the weight class issue is one of these things that is not perfect, but also seems like it would be easy to fix until you start trying to fix it. And then you start trying to figure out what's the better way to do it. And I think, obviously, we first came to weight classes because we didn't want 170-pound Anthony Macias to have to fight 240-pound Dan Severn anymore, right? Like, we wanted to move the sport out of those early gladiator days and into the modern era, and more than anything else, we wanted state athletic commissions to sanction the events. And so the sport had to kind of, out of necessity, move toward weight classes to have a more professional and more palatable feel. Now, do the weight classes cause harm? Yes. Are they somewhat silly at times? Yes. But what else are you going to do? How else are you going to do it? And it sounds easy to say, oh, we're just going to have two guys of relatively the same size fight each other, and that's fine. But then you run into the question, and this is another reason why I think a company like the UFC likes to have weight classes and why they have added more weight classes over time. Who are your champions going to be?
Yeah.
Are you going to have a guy who is sort of 190 pounds championship? Or are they all just going to be BMF titles? Because I'll tell you what the UFC likes. They like having 10 weight classes so they can put gold on the poster at every pay-per-view. So that's another thing about weight classes. But if someone can think of a better way to do it that works, I would be genuinely interested to talk about it. So there's that. All right, that's going to do it for this week's listener mail. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you'd like to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, Ben, we got a very impressive performance from Nassourdine Imavov over the weekend. He pretty much wore Roman Dolidze around the cage like a hat for five full rounds. In fact, perhaps the most impressive thing that Roman Dolidze did in this fight was that he was still there at the end of it, because he accepted so many strikes and, frankly, such a diversity of different strikes from Imavov that a lesser fighter may have gotten, he might have gotten him out of there. Dolidze might have been stopped in the first round of this thing if he was a lesser fighter. And we get in the end to a somewhat strange majority decision win for Nassourdine Imavov, because one judge had it 47-47. The other two judges, well, one judge had it 49-44. The other one had it 48-46. And of course, maybe the headline of those scores was that Imavov had a point taken away from him both for an illegal kick to a downed opponent and also maybe for John for shouting at Chris Curtis and Roman Dolidze's corner through the cage in an exchange that was heated and long enough for Herb Dean to threaten to disqualify him.
Yeah.
If he didn't get over and get into his own corner, his own neutral side of the cage and shut up and not even look in that direction as Herb Dean made him like turn around and look elsewhere.
All right. Am I the only one who, when Herb Dean is vociferously insisting he will disqualify you, there's a part of me that was like, is this the I will turn this car around level threat? Is this the MMA ref's version? Because you're not going to.
Especially like, when he was like, don't look over there. It's like, okay, dad, whatever.
I understand you're trying to say something severe enough to get the guy's attention. I don't know if I believe that you're going to disqualify the guy for, as you say, John with the opposing fighter's corner through the fence. Because if then, it's like, on what grounds do you get disqualified? What's the rule there? Like, talking too much shit. Disqualification due to talking too much shit. I don't know if that one exists. And maybe it's like a failure to follow the referee's instructions or whatever. But I did feel like that was Herb just being like, you know what? I will turn the lights off and everybody can put their heads down on their desk. Is that what you want? And just being like, oh, and it worked. It worked to regain control in there in the moment. I did kind of have to agree, though, with his post-fight comments where he was like, hey, if you want to get in here and do this, especially to Chris Curtis, who is himself a fighter, like if you're, when you're in here, you could say whatever the hell you want. When you're out there, though, shut up. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Fair enough. Fair point there.
I mean, this was three Extreme Couture coached fighters in a row for Nassourdine Imavov. He lost to Sean Strickland in January of last year. Then he did, in fact, have that no contest against Chris Curtis, where there was a clash of heads and Curtis was unable to continue. And now he gets the majority decision win over Roman Dolidze. So there's already some bad blood here between Imavov and Chris Curtis. And LOL, bro, how about at the end where Chris Curtis was doing the thing outside the cage where you like you pretend you have a little handle that rolls up the middle finger and then rolls
you don't see that so much anymore, you know?
That's one of those ones. You don't see it in professional fighting that much.
That was kind of like that peaked with like, you know, the smart aleck kid in a 90s movie would do that shit. And it must have made an indelible impression on Chris Curtis. He's still out here doing it. That's just one of those ones that has fallen out of fashion. Remember the first time you saw that, like in a movie or TV show, something where you saw like somebody do the wind up middle finger and you were like, oh, see, it had only occurred to me to flip it, to flip the old, but never occurred to me to roll it up. Mm-hmm. We're breaking new ground here in the year of our Lord 2024. However, you know, we've seen that one, Chris, we've seen it.
It's weird the way some of these discussions that we have in this sport seem to take on a weird momentum, right? We were just talking about the downed opponent thing, right? Yeah. A couple weeks ago. What was it? Was it Arnold Allen and Movsar Evalev? Was that the fight where we were debating the downed opponent and now they're talking about making changes to the downed opponent rule? Well, here you go again with Nassourdine Imavov. He's got Roman Dolidze. He's got the fingers down trying to be a downed opponent. And then you got Imavov throws the kick, hits him in the head. It's unknown if like he thought Dolidze's hands were up, whatever. And now we got to have this conversation all over again. What's a downed opponent? Is it cheating or gaming the system somehow to have a couple fingers down? Are we going to change the rule, et cetera, et cetera? It's just weird. Sometimes we start having these conversations and then we see the same thing happen in quick succession over different events.
Yeah, it just so happens, Chad, that as we've mentioned before on this podcast, that I've started a new job writing MMA stuff for Yahoo, and I'm working today, hopefully be out tomorrow, a story about where we stand with the current downed fighter rule and what the proposed changes are and what some of the obstacles are to getting those changes. One of the things that I think is a potential issue is interpretation of that rule. How it's been put into words by referees at times, and especially when they're talking to fighters' corner. Like, only recently, it seems like, have we even heard this discussion about It's got to be weight bearing. If it's a weight bearing thing that you're posting down there, which I don't think we want to get into shit like that, man. That we already have a tough time when the rules are super clear.
Yeah.
And we don't want to ask these fighters in the heat of the moment to look down there, see a guy's hand on the mat and be like, okay, is it just touching or is it bearing weight? Like, that's ridiculous. That is not a thing we want them to ask. And so, you know, I was just having a conversation today with Mike Mazzulli, who's the president of the ABC, and him talking about how, you know, you don't want to, like, the whole point of trying to change the wording of the rule was so that you can't just graze a couple fingertips down there. Because similarly, you don't want the fighter, like the position that Dalidze and Imabov were in, you know, you're kind of off to the side, you're looking, maybe you can't see if his hand is down. And you could argue, like, don't throw the kick if you can't be absolutely sure. He tried to win a damn fist fight in a cage with a big pile of money. And you get twice as much money if you can kick that guy in his head and make him fall down and go to sleep. And so if you see that opportunity to throw that kick, I don't know if we can ask the guy to be like, make sure you get a clear view to see that he doesn't have two fingertips grazing the canvas ever so gently. Like, that feels like we get ourselves into trouble by leaving too much room for interpretation in the rules. Yeah. It should be way clear. Like, I don't personally, if I had it my way, you wouldn't be able to do shit by having a hand down at all. Like, you hand down, hand up wouldn't matter. Like, if you want to be down, put a knee down. Like, and that was some of the proposed changes to the rules, is do away with the hand stuff, make it so that you got to have something else down other than the soles of your feet or your hands. The other potential change is making it so that fingers don't count, either your fist down or the palm of your hand down. I still think you're going to get into tricky situations there, but better than having the fingertip stuff where we're trying to look at it and determine, like, is he actually touching? Especially because we've seen guys, and we've praised them for being smart about it, when they're in a front headlock position and they'll kind of lift you up a little bit to get your fingers off the mat and then knee in the head. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, and it seemed like that's what Arnold Allen was trying to do, right?
Right. But then it's also like, if you mistime that one, then you get accused of being a dirty fighter, kneeing the guy in the head when he's down. And it's like, we just have to be honest with ourselves and say, there is no, like, imagine this, Chad. You're walking down the sidewalk, you see a quarter laying there on the sidewalk, you bend over at the waist, you put two fingers down on the pavement, you pick that quarter up. You wouldn't afterwards tell somebody that you got down on the sidewalk. You were down on that sidewalk to get that quarter. No, you were not down just because your fingers touched the ground. You just bent over, picked up the quarter, got yourself 25 cent richer. You did not get down. You were never a downed person claiming that quarter. That should be kind of how we think of it. You're not down. You put two fingers on the mat. That does not make you down. The wording just needs to be more clear, and we just need to take that aspect of interpretation completely out of it, because we're asking for trouble in this sport, even when the rules are very clear.
Yeah, we don't need to leave any more up to interpretation from either fighters or referees, if you ask me. Need to make it as clear as possible. Nassourdine Imavov now 5-2-1 in the UFC. He's 13-4-1 overall. His only losses are to Phil Haas by majority decision in his second fight in the UFC, and then Sean Strickland. You know, he seems to be a nice little prospect there. Late 20s, good striker, looked leaps and bounds ahead of Roman Dalidze, and maybe we will bring him up a little bit later when we talk about the middleweight title picture. All right, let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, and then we'll move on to round number two. Ben, what's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week?
Jed, did you see that the little weigh-in box thing? The UFC has a new sponsor.
Oh, no, I missed this. Why they got a
new sponsor?
New sponsor alert. Is it something classy? Is it what you might call an A-list sponsor?
Well, it depends what your personal list looks like, okay. I suppose. I saw this via the big homie Aaron Bronstetter's Twitter account. He notes, has a picture of it here, and he says, the box for UFC weigh-ins are now sponsored by Riz Pharma, announced yesterday as the UFC's official erectile dysfunction and hair loss medication partner.
Hmm.
Another reason to make sure that you make weight without needing to strip down, is that if you don't, and you know, if they're going to bring out one of those things to cover you up there, you're going to be standing there and there's going to be a picture of you that lives on Google Images forever. You naked behind a box that says Riz Pharma. And that when people look that up, they will learn that that is the official erectile dysfunction and hair loss medication partner. And there you are flexing behind it. I mean, need to ask Ben Rothwell how he might have done things differently if he had known that picture of him with the extends dick pill medication across his shorts at one of those like affliction weigh-ins or whatever was going to live on as long as it did. Fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me. I did not know that. Now I'm looking at the website, Riz Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a classy operation. So
yeah, I like my pharmaceutical companies to incorporate modern youth slang. Like nothing says trustworthy pharmaceutical above board enterprise. Like just like, hey, hello, fellow kids. How do you do?
It ain't exactly Tylenol, I guess. Ben, we've been talking about for a while now how bored Dana White seems with MMA. He'll talk about almost anything else, right? For a while, he's totally geeked out about the power slap. Although, have you noticed that we haven't been hearing quite as much about the power slap recently as we used to?
Okay, I guess.
Kind of weird.
I mean, I did realize I was happier than
weird.
Usual, so.
Can't imagine why that would be. Can't imagine why the Slappity Slap League isn't making too many headlines anymore. But anyway, Dana, he seems like he'd rather talk about anything else, right? He'd rather talk about the Slap League. He'd rather talk about the bulls that he is raising for Cowboy Cerrone to ride. He'd rather tell us about his diet. He'd rather go on these podcasts and talk about the plandemic or whatever, basically how he turned into a crazy old man shaking his fist at traffic. This weekend, and I, you know, you were the one who alerted me to this, and this isn't the first time this has happened either. He didn't even show up to the Apex. There's a UFC event on, and then there is a boxing event on in the same town, Las Vegas, where Dana White lives and runs his business. Which event does he go to? He goes to DAZN boxing match on the other side of town, and there's a picture of him on Twitter of him hobnobbing with Katie Taylor and everybody else. And this is the week after we learned that he had a quote-unquote business meeting with Eddie Hearn and Conor Benn, who was one of the headlining fighters on Saturday. So I guess this week, are you fucking kidding me? What are you up to, Dana White? Do we have another power slap coming our way? Are you so bored with the UFC that you're going to make good on your long-standing promise to get your fingers into boxing too, bud? Is that what we're doing? And you're not even going to come to your own show. Not even going to stick your face in. Put your head in the door. Be like, hey, I've got a good fight tonight. I'm busy. You fucking
did he not? Did he not even swing by?
I don't know. I saw some articles about how he wasn't there and he's over there at the boxing thing. He must have stuck his head in, right, just to say hi.
It would be polite, you know.
Yeah, you'd think.
It certainly would if he did not at least, you know, dip in to his own event in the city where he actually was at the same time. It would not exactly undercut Renato Moicano's claim that nobody cares about these fight nights, yeah. You know?
You fucking kidding me. Speaking of Renato Moicano, we'll talk about him coming up in round number two.
Well, Chad, I would like to read you a bit of verse, if you will, if you will permit me. This from the poet Renato Moicano. Hey, to Daniel Cormier, I love you, motherfucker. My father is 62 years old, and he had a baby yesterday. So tomorrow, when I get home, I'm going to get my wife pregnant another time. Money Moicano 3 is coming. Continues in the next stanza. I want to tell you another thing. I love fucking America, you know? I'm not an American, but in 2 years I will be an American, and after I am done with fighting, I will serve as a police officer. I want to be a SWAT team, and I want to kill the bad guys. Make no mistake, there is right and there is fucking wrong, and people are forgetting about that. People are going crazy. I want people to respect the fucking law, otherwise this great country is going to be a third world country. Something is wrong in America, and I want motherfuckers to fix it right now.
Not to make fun of Anato Moicano's accent, but he did in fact say third world country.
Well, works on a couple different levels, I guess, for yeah. what he's going for.
Mm-hmm.
He also insisted people go to church and be nice and stuff. You know, a lot of ground covered by Renato Moicano. I'll say for a guy who I would describe Renato Moicano's English as improving, mm-hmm. rapidly improving, and definitely speaks English better than I speak any second language. So, when I first heard Renato Moicano was really making a go of it as a YouTuber, as a fighter YouTuber, I was like, well, is it in Portuguese? But no, it's, you know, he got a lot of content over there in English. And then I went over and I watched it and I was like, he's actually doing it. He's actually making a real effort to be a personality. And I watched one of his videos where he lays out his advice to people who want to actually be serious about a career in MMA. And I was like, I really can't disagree with any of this. He's actually making good points. Yeah. And it's well produced. Like, he's doing a real YouTube page over there. It's not just videos of him driving and going on unhinged rants, like as he's in traffic, the way many MMA fighter YouTube channels are. He comes out here, he wins this decision over Drew Dober, in which, you know, when you get told that you got to work that often, it's not exactly going to a great sign that it's a thrilling fight, but he won. He got his win money there. That's what he was primarily concerned with. And then he goes out here and goes on this rant in a bunch of different directions where at least it feels like we got something to talk about afterwards when it comes to him, Renato Moicano. What are your feelings at this point on this version of Money Moicano, who seems like he is going to talk first and think about what the reception might be later?
This is the first time that I knew we were calling him Money Moicano.
Really?
Yeah.
He's been doing that for a while. That's part of his YouTube bit.
Just over. I didn't know how to YouTube page till you just said it a couple minutes ago. Now I'm looking at it and there's multiple episodes of the Money Moicano show on here.
See? Yeah.
Which is interesting because Moicano in and of itself is his nickname. So now he's got two nicknames. It's like if you were the Pitbull and then you mm-hmm. added Money in front of it, then you'd be the Money Pitbull, because Renato Moicano's real name is Renato Carneiro. So
how the hell have we had MMA for this many years and nobody has been the Money Pitbull yet?
I don't know.
That's absurd.
You and I have talked recently and have talked over the last several weeks about how we liked some of the things Renato Moicano was doing. It seemed that he had reached a zero fucks given point of his UFC career, where he comes out here, starts shouting about how Moicano is business. He starts going on interviews and saying in these exact words that nobody cares about fight nights at the Apex. And we were like, hey, he's saying what we're all thinking. Good for you, Moicano. Also, I guess I respect his efforts to become a YouTuber, the preferred vocation of 11-year-olds all over America. Mm-hmm. And if he's doing a thing over there, that's fine. This rant about how he wants to be on the SWAT team so he can kill people is
bad guys.
Yeah, just the bad guys. No good guys. Only bad guys. Only bad people does Renato Moicano want to somewhat indiscriminately kill, it sounds like. And now we're going to turn into a third world country and people need to go to church, et cetera, et cetera. I guess we've been hearing MMA fighters go on these rants fucking for years, right? Going back all the way to the initial days of MMA in America, having fucking weird post-fight interviews, almost like it's a bad idea to talk to these guys immediately after they have engaged in a cage fight. But this just seems, in some ways, it's like, well, here we go again. MMA fighter going to get on the mic and go on what is apparently an unhinged right-wing rant for us all, which, I know people get mad at us when we talk about these things in this way. I would like to tell them, I don't really want to talk about this shit anymore. I would love to get on here and be like, wow, Renato Moicano was suffocating with the takedowns and he really won a gritty fight over Drew Dober. And wow, that's great. Instead, we're like, what the fuck did this guy mean now? Which is a conversation that seems like we've been having about multiple people on and on for years. And it's just, it's a little tiresome. I'll admit.
Well,
a little tiresome.
I mean, this one is one of the better ones, honestly.
One of the weirder ones, for sure.
Well, it's non-specific, kind of. It feels very much like right-wing coded, like in the sort of like, I am angry at the direction of the country and I would like to kill some people over it. And we're not getting specific about which people and what you think makes them bad guys, which shows you where the bar is, that I'm willing to consider that, okay, fine, you know? And since it comes amid a, like, clearly he had some stuff where he wanted to, didn't even really give Daniel Cormier a chance to ask him any questions, because he's just going to come up with the microphone. We've seen in the past, too, in those moments, in those post-fight moments after he gets a win, your boy, Money Moicano, is pretty pumped up.
Yeah.
He's been known to get fired up right after a fight that he, you know, when he wins and he gets a stoppage, everything, you put the mic in front of his face, he's going to do some shout times. He's going to get a lot of energy and enthusiasm going, and I can appreciate that. And when this rant goes in so many different directions, and I'm like, I can tell that you've been thinking about this. Mm-hmm. This feels like something Renato Moicano has been like rehearsing in the shower for a couple weeks. And yet I also feel like we really went in a whole lot of directions there.
Yeah, we haven't even discussed the thing about his dad. Like, we haven't even brought that up yet. That's maybe the weirdest part of the whole thing. He led with that. That was his opener. That's his opener.
Well, and especially because it's like when he led with it, he led with, my dad is 62 years old, just had a baby yesterday. And our natural response as the audience is to be like, oh, congrats to your dad and his baby, I guess, mazel tov. And it's like, wait, but that was that maybe not why you were telling us? Were you just saying, like, was this, he says something about how, like, he and his dad, like, if his dad is going to do this, then he will also help populate the earth this way. And I went like, I don't know, man, I'm looking around and I don't feel like underpopulation is a problem that we face. But like, I didn't know that's where we were going. I thought you just wanted us to say congrats to your dad and welcome new member of the Moicano family or whatever. And instead, he seemed to take it as a personal challenge that his dad was having a baby at 62 and was just like, well, game on. Here we go. I'm going to get home and get right to work too. You know, you're not the only one who can pump out some babies. It's just like, I was not expecting the post-fight interview to go that way immediately.
Do you think that Priscilla Vanderbrock Moicano was sitting at home and was like, wait, what? What'd he say?
She's being like, you know what? I was thinking maybe we would go on a nice vacation.
Yeah. He's going to wait. What's happening when he gets home? What now?
I got some plans. I was going to get really into pickleball this summer, so this does not work for me.
I'll say this for Renato Money Moicano Carnero. He is almost 10 years and 15 fights into his UFC career, and he is not getting less interesting.
That's true.
Right? He has seemed somewhat deep in his MMA career to have made the decision that he's going to do a thing, that he is going to really turn it up to 11 in terms of his time on the mic, which I guess I appreciate in some ways. And he did have a good fight, beat Drew Dober. So there's that.
I mean, I do kind of like it when you get to a guy who he starts doing that at that point in his career, because I do feel like that's a guy who has looked around and seen how this shit works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And has made some choices about it.
Absolutely. Him and Chucky Buffalo both. All right. That's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, here we go again from the Apex down there in Las Vegas, February 10th, this Saturday, a.k.a. the day before the Super Bowl. We are going to have a middleweight contender fight between Jack Hermanson and Joe Pyfer. Co-main event, Dan Ige versus Andre Feely. And this is a matchup between, I guess you could say, 185-pound fighters who might be headed in different directions. Singing and dancing Jack Hermanson seemed like for a while he was going to be a capital G guy, but he is just 2-3 in his last five at this point, coming off a loss to Roman Dolidze in December of 2022. He is 35 years old, and maybe some of the luster has come off the star there of Jack Hermanson. On the other side of the coin, 27-year-old Joe Pyfer, body bags, as we have mentioned. He is on a bit of a streak here in the UFC. I believe he is undefeated in the UFC. Another one of these contender guys who has come into the cage. He likes to hit hard. He loves to throw them thangs. He's also got some ground skills. Dare I say, Joe Pyfer seems like a guy that the UFC would have some medium interest in making into a capital G guy. And so here you get this fight between a guy we recognize and a guy maybe the UFC wants to get a little shine on in Joe Pyfer.
Yeah. It does seem like if I am Necromanson Jack Hermanson and the UFC comes to me with this one, I don't immediately assume it's because they think that this is a great fight for me. That this is the one that's really going to vault me to the next level. It seems to me like they are thinking like, Joe Pyfer, that's one that we could get excited about. That's one where we'd like to see it go somewhere. Who has a name? Jack Hermanson still has a little bit of a name. Let's throw him in there. Especially for the level of fight nights we're doing, this qualifies as a main event, kind of. Sure, let's go ahead and let's book it. And, you know, one thing I will say, though, is that we've seen this kind of matchmaking before, and it doesn't always go the way it seems like the promoter wants it to.
That's absolutely correct. In fact, I feel like it's one of the reasons why maybe we didn't see a ton of this in the historically speaking in MMA, because there's so many ways for this stuff to go bad. And, but it seems like it has become a little bit more popular, or we see it more often over the last few years. Joe Pyfer, a minus 238 favorite here, Jack Hermanson plus 195. So we agree about a 2-1 favorite is Joe Pyfer. We mentioned this at the top of the show, but I feel like you've got a little bit of the, an interesting situation happening at middleweight where, you got Dricus du Plessis. He just beat Sean Strickland for the title. And we don't know what's going to happen with Israel Adesanya. Bobby Knuckles is coming off a loss to DDP. He's got a fight coming up, I believe, with Paulo Costa. Then you got Jared Cannonier and Mad Marvin Vettori to round out the top six. And other than that, you got a lot of guys who are still on the come up, right? You got Brendan Allen, who we talked about, Khamzat Chimaev down there, of course, Nasruddin Imavov, who we talked about. And then you got a guy like Joe Pyfer, who is trying to make his way, trying to get into that top 25. It seems like an interesting one. It seems like an interesting weight class where some of the old dogs, you could say, might have played out the string a little bit, and we might be looking for a youth movement in terms of people who could become contenders.
Well, you look at this fight card, the main event is real close to being oops all middleweights, or in the main card. I mean, you got of the five fights on the main card, I'm looking at at least the Wikipedia version, three of the five are middleweight fights. And it looks like, okay, we're trying to get some action going. We got a whole bunch of guys. We got a whole bunch of just faces out there. And we're in the process of trying to sort through and see if any of them are going to turn out to matter. Sometimes you see this kind of booking, you go, well, it feels like a little, you want to have some backups in case somebody messes up a weight cut or gets sick or slips on a banana peel on fight week, and you can kind of mix and match them. I don't know if I can recall too many times seeing this much, this frequent middleweight bookings, because it's not like middleweight has been one of those weight classes where, especially in the last few years, it feels like it ought to be better than it is.
Yeah.
It feels like there ought to be more top competition than there is.
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, it's not like we've lost interest in these guys, right? Israel Adesanya, Bobby Knuckles, Sean Strickland could still make a something of a comeback. Paulo Costa, Khamzat Chimaev. Those are all guys who, you know, we still have a lot of life left in them. None of them are guys that we would look at and be like, oh, we have likely seen the best from those guys. If any one of those guys took another run at the title, I don't think we'd be that surprised. But I also don't think it could hurt to get a Nassourdine Imavov or a Joe Pyfer up in the mix in that, you know, top six, seven, eight spots. So I feel like you are on the verge of having something kind of interesting percolating.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned that, you know, next weekend you got UFC 298 where you got Robert Whittaker versus the SLG himself.
Yep.
Paulo Costa, the secret juice out there at middleweight. And that is one of three middleweight fights on that fight card too. So a lot of action over there at 185.
Destined for big things. Is that what you're telling me? 185 on a bullet train to the top?
I wouldn't go that far. That there's a lot of activity.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week for the co-main event podcast.
You're going to do Just Saying Stuff?
Yeah. I was just going to say, let's do Just Saying Stuff. Okay. And then we'll get out of here. So pipe down, bud.
You've been known to forget a Just Saying Stuff every time.
That's true.
Let's just say it.
Like, you didn't even give me a chance. You just jumping down my throat over there. Do you have a Just Saying Stuff for this week?
I do. As a matter of fact, I do.
Let's hear it.
Well, Chad, I was looking over here at this bloody elbow story by Anton Tabuena. I think this is an updated version of the earlier story where, you know, the text messages that we're seeing via the UFC antitrust lawsuit where we're calling John Jones a scumbag, mm-hmm, between Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta. There's also some about a contract renegotiation with the UFC and Mark Hunt. Now, this is from August 2014, where Dana White is asking Lorenzo if they've come to a contract agreement with Mark Hunt, and saying, no, they still have not resolved this contract dispute. This is from the Bloody Elbow story. In response, White writes, quote, okay, yeah, he's a fuckhead, and asks Fertitta to, quote, bury that fucker. Now, during his deposition, when asked about that, White tries to explain that line about bury him just means sue him. Now, as the story points out, well, as we all know, Mark Hunt and the UFC did get into some legal action against each other, but that was at Mark Hunt's instigation. And if you look at what was going on there at around August 2014, that's 1 month before he went out there and knocked out Roy Nelson, one of those classic Mark Hunt walk-off KOs in the UFC's, where he headlined a fight night event in Japan over in Saitama. And it comes just like a year after he had that, you remember him and Bigfoot having that absolutely insane fight that was on like fight of the year lists and everything. You know, that was in December 2013. So I'm just saying, I remember a couple years before that. I want to say around 2010, 2011, Dana White showing up to a post-fight press conference after Mark Hunt had won a couple of fights. Maybe it was after he knocked out Chris Tuscher. Maybe it was after he knocked out Chet Congo. I can't totally remember. And he was saying how impressed he was with Mark Hunt, because when they bought Pride, they had all these contracts and they thought, Mark Hunt, he can't even make 265. We'll just pay him out the money from his contract and, you know, be done with it. And Mark Hunt said, no, I want to fight. Could have just got paid to stay home and let the contract die and said, no, give me the fights. And so they said, all right, we're obligated to give you these fights. Gave him the fights. He came in, you know, lost that, got armbarred by Sean McCorkle in the first one, and then reeled off four straight wins and became a capital G guy in the UFC. Ended up getting the, heavyweight title fight at some point. And Dana White was talking about how amazingly impressed he was with this guy who, you know, insisted on getting his chance and making good on that chance. And then it didn't take more than a year or two later to be like, he's a fuckhead, bury him. I'm just saying, this hope this kind of stuff is instructive to some of the other UFC fighters who feel like, I don't know, man, they love me. I'm in business with these guys. They'll do whatever they want. You're only one contract dispute away from being a fuckhead who gets buried. I'm just saying.
Well, you know what? You mentioned some memory lane names there, man.
Yeah,
Chris Tuscherer, Sean McCorkle. Love hearing mm-hmm. about those guys. Takes me back to my youth. You mentioned that the UFC is over there in federal court, and people are talking about their business practices. People are talking about the UFC's business practices over there in the antitrust lawsuit. I'd like to share a dissenting opinion with you about the UFC's business practices. And this comes from a guy I mentioned before, Eddie Hearn, about his recent meeting, quote unquote, business meeting with Dana White. And this comes from the MacLife.com. This is Eddie Hearn in conversation with the MacLife. He says, quote, "I look at Dana and I look at the UFC and I think that is just the most incredible business. I go to the performance center and I go into his office. He takes me into his own gym that he's got there, his own recovery center. And I'm like, this is where I want to be. And there's nothing wrong with that." Well, the fact that there's nothing wrong with it is kind of at issue right now, Eddie. It's kind of a little bit of a court kerfuffle happening there to find out if there is, literally speaking, something wrong with what's going on over there. But I guess this week I'm just saying, when you hear Eddie Hearn saying, it's the most incredible business, they got the performance center, Dana White's got his office with a gym and his own recovery center, and I'm like, this is where I want to be. I'm just saying, be careful, boxers. Be careful, because you don't get the performance center and the recovery area and your own gym and all this other stuff by giving the fighters more than 50% of the profits. You built that home gym on giving the fighters 13% of the profits. So you hear Eddie Hearn talking about that, make a mental note of it. I'm just saying. All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event podcast. We'll be over on the Patreon page all week. Come hang out with us over there, patreon.com/co-main-event. If not, we'll talk to you right back here next week. As for right now, we're done. We're through. We're out. "The most incredible business," says Eddie Hearn, without a hint of irony, without a hint of, like, I don't know, maybe something's going on. Maybe there's people having a different conversation about what an incredible business it is.
I can't disagree with him that keeping all the money is an incredible business.
It is a great
good
business
work
model.
If you can get it.
Yep. If you can just keep all the money, that's a good business model. You will succeed in many cases if you can just keep all the money. You will be a financial success in the business that you are in.
He's done the math on this one, and it all checks out.